From FLN News, this is Inside the FLX. Today, we're going in-depth on a proposal to dramatically overhaul and repurpose a crumbling church on South Main Street in the city of Geneva. Developer Mark McGrory says the spot would be ideal for an inn, event space, restaurant, and upscale bar. There are a lot of people who agree with him in Geneva, but neighborhood opposition says it would change the look and feel too much. Today I'm joined by McGrory as well as Murray Heaton and Major General Bruce Tuxel. Heaton is a local attorney with a practice in the city of Geneva. He's also a lifelong member of the congregation. Tuxel has served in a number of leadership roles with the Trinity Episcopal Church, which has called the space on South Main Street home for a long time up until recently. The bottom line is that it's incredibly expensive to maintain a structure like the Trinity Church. It's even more expensive rehabilitating one. But there's good news on that front. The Landmark Society of Western New York named the Trinity Church on its annual Five to Revive list. The Landmark Society helps developers and stakeholders access grants to preserve historic structures like the church. The panel who is in studio this week discussing the project's history, Five to Revive announcement, and future are optimistic about this being a net positive for the city of Geneva, but want to see progress happen soon. If all goes according to plan over the next 3 to 4 months, the new space could be open in about 2 years. But things have been stalled, going nowhere, for about 4. Before we get into all of that, though, I need to ask our dedicated and awesome listeners to do a few quick things. One, wherever you're listening to us, whether that's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, follow the show. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Both of those help new listeners find the program. And finally, three, head over to patreon.com/FL1 to learn how to support what we're doing here with these podcasts. There is no mandatory subscription fees, but if each listener contributed $1 per month, we could dramatically increase the number of episodes of Inside the FLX we release. After our only break of the hour, we will pick up my conversation with McGrory, Heaton, and Tuxel as they discuss the buildup, neighborhood resistance, and what this development could mean for the city of Geneva. Today's episode is brought to you by Herman Brothers Furniture Store. Tired of the big box approach to furniture shopping? Stomp in to Herman Brothers Store located in downtown Lyons and see how they've been doing it since 1945. Herman Brothers carries one of the largest selections of furniture, appliances, and mattresses between Rochester and Syracuse. And even better, Herman Brothers services all of the furniture and appliances they sell. It's the honesty, integrity, and reliability that they've been delivering for 74 years. Stop in, shop online, or give Herman Brothers a call to learn more about their low prices, free layaway, interest-free financing, and no credit needed financing. They even offer same-day or next-day delivery in most cases. Visit HermanBrothersLyons.com or call 315-946-4831 today. All right, thanks to all three of you for being here today. Mark, I want to get everybody listening up to speed. So where do we stand right now with development? Obviously, there have been plenty of headlines on the Finger Lakes Times about the future of the church, the historic church. A lot at stake, clearly. So get us up to speed, and then we're going to start to dive into some of the challenges that you guys have sort of seen along the way.
Let me, if I may, let me first say that I've been in the real estate development business for 40 years, and many of those years I've spent in the adaptive reuse of historic buildings. Started out in Toronto renovating old Victorian homes, and then went into more commercially related historic buildings that were in derelict condition. Unfortunately, something somewhat like Trinity churches currently. From a legal standpoint, we applied for a use variance to the Geneva Zoning Board of Appeals. Contrary to what a recent article letter to the editor in the Finger Lakes Times saying that we asked for 4 variances, we asked for 1 use variance. And the Zoning Board of Appeals subsequently approved the use variance. And while doing that, they look at 4 four items that is mandated by the state of New York. One is, you know, is it a unique use? Mm-hmm. The second is, you know, can the owner of the property get a reasonable rate of return? The third one is, does it change the essential neighborhood? And the fourth is whether or not they self-created the hardship. Mm-hmm. So when anybody goes to for a use variance, each of those items have to be reviewed by the zoning board. The zoning board of appeals in Geneva exhaustively reviewed all those items and subsequently approved a variance. That variance was appealed by about a dozen people who live basically in the South Main Street Historic District. That appeal was dismissed by the Supreme Court of New York in May of this year. Unfortunately, in June of this year, the petitioners appealed that decision of Judge Reed to the appellate court. That is now going to be heard, we hope, in January or February of this of 2020. So we've been basically working on this project now for, by the time we get all the appeals, for just over 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, obviously we want to talk a little bit about what some of those concerns were from local residents, from neighbors who mm-hmm. who voiced those, but I'm curious, Murray, from your perspective, as the concerned citizen, the resident who has a little bit of skin in the game in terms of, you know, this is a lifelong staple for you, what's your perspective on just the opposition to it and how it seems to be pretty focused in one area versus a community-wide opposition to a development, which might be more typical of something that has gotten as much attention as this has over the last several months?
Well, I think the situation in a small community and small communities like ours and our surrounding communities, when something comes up that is a change, automatically sets off a certain kind of thinking. And historically and experientially, if there's any change in what people perceive to be a residential neighborhood, it takes on a whole new emotional dimension, because there is, in our way of thinking about how we want to live, mm-hmm. Kind of a very high priority placed on what we consider to be residential. Take that one step further. I take that to mean if we're in our home, it's sacred, it needs to be quiet, private, and protected. Mm-hmm. That is a strong feeling. This project was proposed, and the notion of having an event center and the notion of having a restaurant and a bar were immediately perceived as violating what was considered to be the residential character of the neighborhood. So I think that was at the heart of it. And I think the looking at the process, there was some frustration with the Zoning Board of Appeals because they were probably ill-equipped to handle an issue like this, which was fairly complicated. So mm-hmm. the process took a long time, and I think that process generated some concern on the part of the community. I went to a number of the zoning hearings just as an observer and found that the case for the variance was presented in a very professional and thorough way. So, you know, the notion of something being done behind closed doors was, you know, a standard complaint about City Hall and unfounded. I also found that there was a lot of misapprehension of what the plan was going to contain. So you hear event center, you think rock concerts and bars, or rock concerts and wild wedding parties. Mm-hmm. You think a bar, you think a standard bar downtown. And that quickly was used as a way of kind of not paying close attention to what was being proposed. And so from my perspective, I had these conversations. I would say, having been a local attorney for as long as I've been, I know more people than most, and I love my community, and that means I love the people in it. And so we're talking about my friends who are in opposition. We're talking about people I encounter all the time. And so I would say it's become quite emotional on those grounds. And I think there's some exaggeration that has happened in the response and some hot buttons that have been pressed. And I think it's distracted from looking at the true nature of the project and actually looking at the true nature of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and the true nature of what is a national problem, a world problem, retrofitting these beautiful structures that create special space that we'll never be able to replace. And so it's hard. And then you take it one step further. The opposition is pushing really hard, saying Trinity didn't consider putting it on the market and developing the property as apartments. I work with a lot of real estate developers. I do commercial work. I do commercial lending. The notion of making that work was problematic. If it would work, you would have to separate the church structure from the rest of the property, which I don't believe you can do in New York State. And I wouldn't want it to happen. I wouldn't want to see condominiums fill up the sanctuary. That's a defeat from my point of view with what is a true community asset, which is that building. And so given that, and given the way the state supports the projects through and the national government supports the project through historic tax credits, you've got to have a proposal that does that. This, but I went and really got into the nuts and bolts of the proposal. It was amazing to me, and I said this to a number of people after the first presentation, that we had someone who was willing to preserve the sanctuary. And I thought to myself, and then I got into it further, and the quality of what is being proposed is high. And then moving from that to how it fits into the neighborhood, well, South Main Street has a long history. It used to be commercial. Right now, according to city statistics, you know, it's got a lot of different things happening there. Historically, town-gown relationships have dealt with the students coming back on Saturday nights at 2 a.m. in no condition to be citizens of the community in terms of language, trash, and behavior. That's part of that street. You've got seven fraternities there, and that is business that downtown needs. Mm-hmm. It's not what you consider to be the sacrosanct residential neighborhood. And so balancing how this moves forward, I think, the opposition, I understand. It's this notion of residential, 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 and we're going to make this terrible intrusion into the sacrosanct residential area. But I think it's exaggerated, and I think it has distracted from looking at the true nature of the project. And most importantly, the preservation of the sanctuary, which I think Geneva needs to have happen.
And it, obviously, it's complex, and you're talking about a diverse neighborhood overall, just in terms of all the different types of things that are going on there on that portion of South Main Street. Bruce, I want to shift to you and get two questions out of the way right off the bat. One, what was sort of what has been internally the reaction to the opposition, but more broadly, the idea of converting this space into something else? And then also, what has this sort of process over the last few years meant for the congregation itself?
The congregation is fully supportive of this. We had a vote, obviously, to make sure to see if this is what we wanted to do. And the vote came out with one dissenter. The rest want to see the church preserved. And we're a small congregation now. We no longer have the pledge revenue coming in that we used to, so we can no longer afford such a huge structure. It takes over $6,000 a month just to heat it. So we are, this past year, we had to stop heating, and we basically put it in a hold status, which is not a good thing for a building to be in a hold status.
And I would imagine that it's a great transition right there into what are the concerns with the building now moving forward in this holding pattern? What are the implications on the development side if a structure like this is sort of left untouched for a period of time?
The building does deteriorate. There's no question about that. However, having been in the business for so long, one of the things that a prudent developer will always have is a contingency that is way above what one would normally expect in a project. Mm-hmm. Probably almost three times what you would expect. So, we certainly, this has taken longer, Josh, than we had anticipated. But we've built in contingencies to handle the continuing decline of the building from a physical standpoint. So I'm not terribly concerned about that. It's more work, needless to say. As Bruce noted, last winter they had to turn off the heat and not, the plumbing, mechanical, electrical systems are all 90 years old. Mm-hmm. Every year they were repairing steam pipes, corroded pipes. And if you ever walk through the building, you'll see what I mean. It's just more work. Mm-hmm. But we have the financial resources to look after it. So ultimately we're going to probably see almost a 3-year delay of where we expect it to be. We expect it to open in May of 2018. It appears now that it would be perhaps May of 2021. But in that period, the city has lost 20 full-time jobs, 10 part-time jobs. In 3 years, probably $2.5 million worth of lost wages, which impacts everybody. The city will have lost almost $100,000 in occupancy taxes. The state will probably have lost almost double that. We have an arrangement with Finger Lakes Community College where we were providing scholarships to deserving students along with internships. So we've lost 3 years of that for the community. Mm-hmm. We're just in an unfortunate situation. But I'm here to stay. I'm not abandoning this project. The church has been incredibly supportive, and I personally, as both Murray and Bruce stated, you know, the church is a Trinity Episcopal Church has been in Geneva for over 200 years, and it needs to stay in Geneva. And one of my main focuses is, yes, we'll make money, but it's to maintain Trinity Episcopal Church as an ongoing congregation, and that's exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the development itself, from sort of A to Z, what it will entail when it is completed, when it does get across the finish line.
Right.
What will it look like, and what will it look like in relation to the rest of the neighborhood, in the greater context of Geneva at large, which is, you know, growing every year?
Correct. Let me firstly say that there are no additions to any of the buildings. The property will essentially look exactly the way it does right now. There will be one driveway added, one way to the site. There'll be external signage. That's basically what, from somebody walking along South Main Street, if you took the signage away, they probably wouldn't even know that it had been converted to an inn, or a restaurant or event space. And one has to remember, you know, we talk about the event space. You know, the church itself had a seating area of 585 people. And it's hosted many events to that number. You know, we're decreasing that by two-thirds. But, you know, again, we're looking at no exterior improvements or additions. We're renovating the buildings from top to stern. Everything has to be removed from the insides. The biggest, and Murray touched on this briefly, you have to understand, and it's typical with this type of project, is you've got one of the buildings that requires the most in preservation costs, but it's also the building that creates the least amount of revenue. So you've got this divergent aspect of cost versus revenue. If you didn't have historic tax credits, you can never make this project work. And as Murray stated, the Department of Interior has classified the property as one entity, so that once you remove one of the entities, like the rectory or the sanctuary or the Trinity Hall, from the equation, it no longer qualifies for historic tax credits, which is a key factor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're obviously the sanctuary requires significant costs, and right now we're projecting that to be about $2.5 million just in the rectory alone, or just in the sanctuary alone. And again, very limited revenue potential in there. Yes, we'll have special events, but, you know, typically that's, you know, one a weekend.
Yeah.
So the amount of revenue being generated from that doesn't nearly cover the cost of the preservation costs. So you have to have other areas where that generate income, and that's where the restaurant and the inn rooms come into play. And, you know, yes, we have, you know, there'll be a bar area, but it, as Murray said, it's not your typical downtown bar. It's a bar that's associated with a restaurant. Yeah. You know, there'll be a few seats there. The only reason the bar is there is to accommodate the restaurant patrons. Mm-hmm. It's not there for people walking in off the street thinking that this is a bar. So that's, but again, you know, we're saving an historic building from demolition, and eventually, if nothing is done to the building, that's exactly what's going to happen. So we're very fortunate that the Landmark Society of Western New York, which is an 80-year-old institution, visited us a few months ago, and you know, the society's focus is preserving architectural heritage and to promote preservation. Mm-hmm. And they have a program called Five to Revive. And they are actually announcing this afternoon a category in their Five to Revive that is the adaptive reuse of historic buildings of worship. Mm-hmm. And they review each of these properties, and they get hundreds of submissions. And Trinity Episcopal Church has been selected as one of the five to revive, which is a significant statement that they have viewed the building, they have viewed what our proposal is, they know the neighborhood, and they have selected us as one of their priority projects to save.
And that really is a great honor because of the work and the success that has been attached to the Landmark Society over the last 4 to 5 years. They have seen some serious inroads made in a lot of communities where there has been a little bit of a divisive conversation or debate about the future of some of these historic structures. I want to shift focus a little bit to the greater context. I'm sure this is not the only place where something, a project like this, is being undertaken. Yeah. What are some of the success stories that you have, you know, brought to city officials, neighbors, et cetera, to, you know, ease some of the concerns and also highlight how much of a positive impact this can be?
This is a... firstly, I think the city and the general population of Geneva have been very supportive.
All on board.
You know, I gave a talk to the Rotary Club about 3 months ago to about 40 people, and to a person, save and except one, they, after the presentation and the question and answer period, to a person, they came up and said how supportive they were. Two people actually came up and said, before your presentation, we were against your project. And now that we understand what you're doing, and as Murray hinted, there's a lot of misinformation going around.
Right.
And when you really look at the project and look at how unobtrusive it is to the neighborhood, both persons said, we absolutely approve of what you're doing and wish me the best of luck. But you get places like historic, you know, there are countless examples of churches being turned into various adaptive reuses. Mm-hmm. However, it's not very common for the congregation to remain as worshipers in the adaptive reuse. Matter of fact, I only know of one. I'm currently doing an adaptive reuse of a church in Buffalo where we're converting it into 12 residential units. And the historic tax credits, it's an unusual situation with respect to churches in that if you enclose or subdivide the sanctuary, you're disqualified from historic tax credits. So you've got to have the sanctuary remain as an open space. But, you know, you get places like Charleston, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, where I have been to on multiple occasions, where you have retail shops, you have restaurants, you have inns, you have single-family residential, all side by each. And that's part of the attraction, quite frankly. When you get into, you know, and Trinity Church is uniquely located, in as much as it's a five-minute walk to Hobart William Smith Colleges, and it's a five-minute walk to downtown. Mm-hmm. Somebody could conceivably park their car and walk everywhere they need to go. And that, you know, that's a very unique experience that I don't believe anyone else in Geneva has. You know, certainly there's lots of very good hotel rooms in Geneva, but there aren't any that is in the church's unique location. But there, you know, you go to places like Pittsburgh. I walked through three church conversions there. But unfortunately, you know, there are 6,000 to 10,000 churches closing every year in the United States. The majority of them don't get to have adaptive reuse. Mm-hmm. And the majority are left to fall apart and are subsequently demolished.
And as we sort of wrap up this conversation, I want to get a couple last pieces of insight from Bruce and Murray here. When it's completed, what will this mean for the city of Geneva, especially given the implication of this site being on the 5 to revive list and now starting to get some steam and a little more attention beyond just the neighborhood and city of Geneva? Murray, we can start with you.
Well, just to back up one step, I think it was very important to me in talking to Mark and looking at the project to consider his prior record of success and his experience. I think the way he speaks about the project shows how he cares about the building and the nature of the project. So one of the concerns I've had to answer in my discussions with people is, yes, this is a very serious developer. Yes, he's very serious about preserving the character of the building. I think having the landmark designation just reinforces that, and that will be an important part of the discussion going forward. I agree certainly with Mark's point that the location is unique. You know, one of the problems that Geneva had was when the cars came in and the arterial came in and the plaza came in, downtown withered, and certainly those of us who have been around long enough have seen that happen. It's coming back, but it's coming back in the form of restaurants and entertainment and housing, believe it or not. The number of upscale apartments downtown has increased dramatically, and those of us who are skeptical thought that would never happen. So I think what this does is it reinforces the strength of downtown and plays into the new economy of downtown in a very important way, and plays into the fact that we do have, unlike a lot of suburbs, we do have a community. We have a downtown, we have a city, and this fits in dramatically with that. Just historically, I had talked to the former president of the colleges, Mark Guerin, when they were considering the Performing Arts Center, and I suggested Trinity would be the ideal place for that. And they actually looked at the building and decided it was too much of a financial undertaking. So, you know, that would have been perfect. I suggested later on to a dean that the Episcopal Church and the colleges could take on the the church as a center for human rights. And I think that obviously didn't happen. It's kind of too big an idea, maybe. But I do think the current use with preserving the special space, and it is special space, where you know you can celebrate what it means to be a human being, I think that potential is preserved, and I think the use will follow that. I mean, how many baccalaureates, inaugurations, and other ceremonies that took place at the colleges took place at Trinity Church? Mm-hmm. It goes back a long ways. Yeah. That hasn't been foreclosed at all. That's still very much a possibility. And using it as a really a draw for the kinds of events that celebrate the human spirit is still there. You know, I've been involved with the Smith Opera House since 77, and you know, it's been a challenge. Theaters like that have been demolished all over the country as well. And I'm always amazed because it's kind of been a community restoration, mainly by volunteers, thousands of them. But it's the same kind of thing. The building generates its own kind of energy, and it is special space in the same way. So I'm very encouraged that these possibilities remain and that the space will generate the kind of use that continues the mission of the church. Mm-hmm. And you know, this adaptive reuse of churches, I suggested to Mark that there are going to be other churches in Geneva that close. I can name them, I won't, but we're going to have this problem. What should really happen, in my opinion, is the city in its leadership role should get ahead of that process so that legislatively these issues are considered and addressed in a legislative mm-hmm. process, which is appropriate. Same thing, you know, just to be making a sidelight with the adaptive reuse of the American Legion. Facing a similar problem, legions are closing all over. The city and its wisdom needs to get ahead of the issues that are surfacing, and I think that would have solved a lot of problems that we're seeing right now. But I do see this as a very positive and a continuation. But I had suggested, what happens with these other congregations? I have an office on Genesee Street, the church next to us houses three congregations. I mean, that same possibility exists. So I think in yeah. all sorts of ways, this is a very positive thing for the city, for the community.
And Bruce?
Oh, the congregation is looking forward to coming back. Right now we have our offices at 78 Castle Street. We're also worshiping at 78 Castle Street. And I will say the strength of the congregation, albeit small, is very strong, and we're together with this and cannot wait to see this come to fruition.
Appreciate the time, guys. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Josh.